Hello and welcome to The Preservationists, the monthly radio show for fans of local historic architecture, the history of unique buildings, and the people from our community working to preserve and restore them. I'm Astronomist Ray, the president of the board of directors at Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS, and the host of The Preservationists. Thank you for tuning in. Today, I am joined by my fellow board member, Eric Wheeler, and we'll be discussing the architectural walking tours that the Lower Columbia Preservation Society will be leading this spring, starting in May. This guided walk reveals the people, industries, and architecture that shape downtown Astoria. Eric, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Astronomers, it's great to be back in conversation with you. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about something that is really central to my work life for the past 25 years or so. About 15 years ago, I moved from the upper Midwest, from Wisconsin to Portland, with the intention of enhancing and developing and broadening my skill set with architectural walking tours. I've been doing this in Wisconsin for a while, wrote National Register nominations, did historic research for individuals and organizations, but I found that the walking tours were kind of mutually beneficial in that people coming on the tours, you know, you would have them these aha moments, and they would start to learn terminology and styles and so forth. So when I moved to Portland, I said, I think this is a big enough city that I can be really busy doing this. So I established a meetup, actually, and operated that for over 10 years and really got to know the city of Astoria and still go back to the city of Astoria, but initially the city of Portland, and I still go back to Portland to lead walking tours. So here's my take. I have kind of a, what would you call it, like a mantra, and I use this for a quarterly magazine that I write for the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and that is, to name it is to know it. So you're out in the street and you're looking at a building and you're saying, well, is this a bungalow and why is it a bungalow and why is it a craftsman bungalow and how is it different from a colonial, et cetera, et cetera. So that kind of level of information, I found that people responded to it. And there was something about standing on the street corner, standing on the sidewalk, you got a group of people and you can actually see and point out what you're talking about. So there is a certain vibe about walking in a neighborhood, walking through downtown, and helping people access what is not just the built environment, but how the architecture, the buildings, represent the culture and the history of the neighborhood. So that's what I was drawn to. I just found that it really connected for people. I've been designing and leading walking tours here in Astoria, but this is a new initiative for the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and I'm really excited to be part of it. We actually have 6 walking tour guides that are on our roster that will be offering our first public walking tour coming up in May. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a project that we've been working very hard on at LCPS. And can you share with our listeners why this route specifically was chosen and what makes this route of the walking tour so special to Astoria's history?
So I sort of, with tongue in cheek, I say that this tour is about fish, fins, and fire. And so actually that's hitting some main themes around which the city of Astoria developed. Obviously the salmon canning industry, the impact of immigration, not just the Finns, but the Chinese and the Sikhs and the Germans and the Norwegians and the Danish and so forth. So we have that very strong immigration history, and the pivotal event in early 20th century history in Astoria was the Great Fire of 1922, from which the city essentially came back like the phoenix rising from the ashes. The entire downtown was rebuilt. There were a handful of survivors, and those buildings are still there. But essentially, all the entire downtown that we see as we walk through downtown, the, 10 block long, about 3 block deep, generally we say that's the downtown area. 90% of those buildings were built after the fire. And you can see the date blocks on some of them, 1923, 1924, 1925. So that was a very, very important time. And so we use that story, that theme, to interpret what Astoria is today. And so I think that's also important. It's not just about the history or about some of the terminology, although the terminology is helpful, because I do think it's a good memory device you know, I point out transom windows at the beginning of the tour, and then about halfway through the tour, you see that horizontal band of windows. What do we call that? And so there is sort of this, I guess it's maybe the teacher in me, is I think it enhances the experience for people. So you asked me where we start and where we end. I don't want to digress too much, but we do start at the Astoria Nordic Heritage Park. And at that point, the guides will talk about the river. It's all about the Columbia River in terms of why Astoria is where it is and developed the way it did because of the Columbia River. And I talk about the fact that for millennia, there were Native people that were living here in a relatively, I shouldn't say luxurious, but these were people that had resources literally at their front door that took advantage of it. And not only were they consuming the wealth of the river, particularly the salmon, the androgynous fish of the area, but they were using fish as a stock in trade. And it's a remarkable story that I think is increasingly being told, is the incredible history of the Native people of the region. And truth to tell is when the Euro-Americans came in here in the 1840s, they said, looks like the Native people here have a pretty good thing going. And so that was really the beginning of the fishing industry. And then, of course, the logging industry. Logging industry, really, all over the Pacific Northwest is a pivotal story. It was important in Astoria, but the key thing was how the harvest of the fish was managed and then marketed. And that was through the canning. So a long explanation of why we're starting on the waterfront, but that's where we start. And then we move actually up to Fort Astoria. And we need to talk about Fort Astoria. It was a relatively small chapter in terms of total years, but an important one, and one that we celebrate today, and the story of the Astor family. And they came back here in 1961, John Jacob Astor IV. So we still have that kind of connection to the family. So not to diminish the significance of it, but this was Astoria's time, and the fur trade was essentially just those 2 years that the fort was an active American trading post. Soon after the War of 1812, of course, it became a British trading post. But we won't spend too much time with that. But we do definitely visit the site, and I give them my take on the geopolitics of the era. And then we walk over towards Fort George, and we talk about, again, we get into this core theme of these tours is preservation, historic preservation, and adaptive reuse.
Yes.
And maybe the flagship of that, so to say, in Astoria is Fort George, the entire campus.
Yeah.
Both the Fort George building, built in 1924, and the Lovell showroom, built before the fire and a fire survivor. And that's just, you know, so it brings those key pieces together. Mm-hmm. And then we go back to downtown and obviously stand right in front of the Liberty Theater, the architectural crown jewel of downtown Astoria. And that's another remarkable story of from opening to fanfare to great years during the 20s and 30s and 40s, and then decline in the 50s, 60s, and then a rebirth at the turn of the 21st century. So, and now it's sort of the center of the performing arts in the region, not just in Astoria. So we have these stories that accompany the visibility of the bricks and mortar. So it's about more than just the buildings, but the buildings are all part of this context that is downtown Astoria. So we spend a couple blocks downtown, and then we go over to the Garden of Surging Waves, another opportunity to talk about the importance of immigrant communities and public space there. And then we head down three more blocks, and we end up at the Captain George Flavel Mansion. So it's touching a lot of bases. It's a relatively short walk. It's about 10 blocks, point to point, about an hour and a half. We felt that it was a niche that had yet to be served. Jeff Daly does a great job with his underground tour. Highly recommend. I've taken the ghost tour. There's a ghost tour downtown. There is Sundial offers tours through the American Cruise Lines for cruise ship passengers walking tour downtown. But there isn't a local group offering a tour that is specifically focused on architecture on historic preservation and adaptive reuse, because adaptive reuse is such an overarching story.
Well, and I love it because all of that kind of ties in with that theme of historic preservation, because a lot of these places, they were maintained recently. We think about the Fort Astoria, that sign, what had been, you know, restored and remade with the woodworking, as well as the verbiage on the sign. And then Fort George's a prime example of readaptive reuse. That is such a great example. Do you have a particular story that stands out to you when you're giving these walking tours?
The story of Sherman Lovell and the Night of the Fire. Those of you that are listening probably know the building I'm referring to is what Fort George now calls the Lovell Showroom. And it is adjacent to the Fort George building, right? The original Fort George building built in 1924. So the Lovell Showroom had just been built before the fire, 1920, and Sherman Lovell was the son of the first automobile dealership owner in Astoria. That was James Lovell. So Sherman now has built his pride and joy. It's the Chevrolet dealership he's inherited from his father, and I think they probably took down the original building that was on that site, and they built this brand spanking new state-of-the-art building designed by Charles T. Diamond, a very important local architect. And so here, the Night of the Fire, I mean, it is a catastrophe that is just getting worse and worse and worse. The fire department is at their wit's end, and the story is that they establish a fire break by dynamiting buildings to protect the upslope area of the residential districts, which was successful because basically the fire zone was all in the commercial district. So the story is that the fire department is coming down the street and they got dynamite and they're blowing these buildings up, and Sherman comes down and he sees the fire truck and he sees these guys and he grabs his shotgun and stands on the corner of his building and said, "Boys, put that dynamite away. You're not blowing up my building." And they didn't. And he saved his building. And then after the fire, the building becomes kind of a clearinghouse, kind of a place where businesses could set up until they could rebuild. And then he opened a movie theater up in the top level. So it actually became a very important part of the renaissance of the restoration of downtown that was the Lovell building. So that's a really cool story.
And what's interesting about that is that that building was able to be saved. It survived the fire.
Indeed.
Wow. And then opening up a movie theater above.
Yeah.
Interesting. Another readaptive reuse.
Yeah. And imagine, and I've heard this from the folks over at the Captain George Flavelle house, the Night of the Fire, the Flavelle family, Captain George had long died, but could actually see the fire at their doorstep. And the fire zone was limited to the area that was built up over the tide flats. And of course, it was all wooden. Wooden pilings, wooden sidewalks, wooden decking, wooden streets, and wooden buildings. And of course, they essentially all burned down. It's a dramatic story. And what's interesting, the silver lining, there's always a silver lining, right? Or there should be in any disaster, is that Astoria ended up with a brand new early 20th century, 1920s era downtown that favored automobiles. They did not replace the streetcar tracks, interestingly. So that shows a shift in American lifestyle away from public transit to private transportation. So Commercial Street was widened to accommodate parking on both sides and then two lanes of traffic, which back in the day it was two-way and now it's one-way. But it's still, you can sense the breadth of that. And then take note of the sidewalks. They are wide sidewalks. So here's a city from 1923 to 1925, way here in the northwest corner of North American continent, that is providing amenities, access for automobiles and pedestrians. And that is, it's not unique perhaps, but I think it's exceptional. That's also part of the story. And you can stand there. I have people standing there and look up and down Commercial Street, and there you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that it was designed with that purpose. And then many of the utilities were then underground.
Yes.
And so you had a brand spanking new downtown. And of course, Astoria at that time was still, we were the capital of the North Coast.
Yeah.
If you're buying a car, you're banking, or you're going to the movies, or you're going to the grocery store, you come to Astoria.
Yeah.
Which we still are sort of the capital of the North Coast. But it's interesting how a city had both the financial resources and had the pride of community and had the vision and had the stick-to-itiveness, for lack of a better word. They were committed to it. And so it happened. And I think what we see today, which is really interesting, we still see that fabric. We look at the dates on those buildings. And again, part of the story, to just jump ahead, is when I'm taking people down the street, they say, look at, notice the bookstore. Notice the art galleries. Notice the tattoo parlor. Notice the
yeah.
the spice shop and the restaurants mm-hmm. and the coffee shops
yes.
and so forth. So in some ways, you can say that the downtown is adaptively reused with the fabric that was built over a 3-year period in the early 19th century, in the early 20th century. So that's another exceptional piece here. So,
are there any hidden details that people usually miss when we walk past these everyday places? Because go through downtown, sometimes we just don't notice things. What do you feel like is something people tend to miss the most?
Well, going back to my mantra is that you have to look up, right? When you're particularly in a residential district, in a commercial district, you have to look up. You can do that in a residential district as well and learn more about the building. However, in a commercial district, in fact, I do this on the tour. We're standing at the corner of 14th and Commercial, and I say, looking to the north and west, there is one building that we're looking at that survived the fire. Which one is it, and how do you know that? And I say, you have to look up. And, of course, that's the hint that helps, because you look up and you can see on the Andrew Young Building, which is now Purple Cow. The Purple Cow business is in the base there.
Yeah.
And you look up and you see the date block is 1916. And they remember that I've been telling them the fire was in 1922.
Yeah.
So some sharp-eyed person will say, oh, look at the date block up there. I say, bingo, you get the prize. There's also what looks like the second story is cantilevered. I say, actually, the first story was reduced, was set back so that it didn't interrupt the flow of foot traffic.
We'll return to our interview with Eric Wheeler in just a moment. But first, I'd like to tell you about events coming soon at the Lower Columbia Preservation Society. In the works is the Astoria Tool Lending Library. The Tool Lending Library will serve as a hub for skill sharing, volunteer engagement, and hands-on learning. Through workshops, community gatherings, and partnerships, the Tool Library aims to preserve not only structures, but also the practical knowledge, craftsmanship, and traditions that sustain them. We are always accepting donations. If you would like to drop in or donate some tools to the Tool Lending Library, so feel free to stop by and take a look at what we have going on in the basement of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society headquarters. We are located at 591 12th Street in Astoria, Oregon 97103. The opening of the Tool Lending Library is happening on Mother's Day, Sunday, May 10th. If anyone out there has any old tools that they're no longer using and would like to donate them to the Astoria Tool Lending Library, please consider donating so you can help other community members work on their historic preservation projects. For more information about the Tool Lending Library or other LCPS-related events, please visit our website at www.lcpsociety.org. Now, returning back to my interview with my fellow board member, Eric Wheeler. How does understanding architecture change the way that we see a city? Because you had mentioned that at the beginning of the tour, you'll say, these are transom windows. And then mm-hmm. you kind of bring it up and as a pattern of, let's talk about architecture. The buildings that we see, they were built with intention.
Yeah.
With the purpose of, there's a reason that we build it this way. That's what makes architectural historic, but then also that's why we preserve and restore them
yeah.
is because they're built for that certain purpose.
And again, downtown history is a great example because some sharp-eyed architectural historian might visit us someday, and he's from Connecticut, and he would look at the downtown and say, looks like all these buildings were built about the same time. I wonder if there was a flood or a fire that wiped out everything. I think someone could come up with that hypothesis and they would be correct. Because what we have, and just imagine it's February of 1923, the fire was a couple of months ago, and the city is being descended upon by insurance agents and concrete contractors are coming. And I mean, I can't imagine what it would have been like, but load after load after load of concrete, essentially rebuilding the entire understructure and the superstructure. These buildings are all built out of concrete, stucco exterior, but you know, concrete bones and brick, all masonry downtown. So therein is a key visual entree into the story. And you can see it. And I say, look at the building. And mostly they're single story, but there are a couple two story. So was there a general consensus among the city council and the business owners? This is what we need to do. We all agree on this. Let's go for it. And so I think there was at some level something like that that was going on. Because as you look from storefront to storefront, recessed entry, lots of plate glass windows, mezzanines in back, a little short mezzanine in front. And you see that pattern repeated up and down Commercial Street. So I think there was the spirit of the time,
yeah,
the commitment, the dedication, and the vision, all these things, and of course, the money. Bear in mind that even the first generation of entrepreneurs who came to Astoria in the 1870s, 80s, and 90s, they were still around. There was a lot of money in moneyed families. And as you walk through the residential districts, you'll see these names. Yeah, early cannery owner, early lumber baron. So there was money in the city, and there was the will. That's the word I'm looking for. There was the will to rebuild. And I often say, okay, here I've been telling you the story about the 1920s, the Great Fire in 22, and then the rebuild. What if the Great Fire had happened in December of 1932? Would we have had a modern rebuilt downtown the way we did and what we have now?
Yeah, because you see so many eminence of the 1920s in the downtown, because it's not just the buildings. Like, even the sidewalks, you look at the vault lights, that was a popular feature.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
An important part of the fabric.
And
people ask me about vault lights as well.
Yeah, because they have a purpose. They were to bring light to the basement. So.
Right.
Yeah, so interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite spot on this tour in particular?
I stand people at the corner of Commercial and 12th, and I say, all right, close your eyes, go back in time, and imagine here, we got the Liberty Theater. That's our anchor. That's our pivotal building on the corner. Across the street is the Wells Fargo Bank. Now, it doesn't look like it did when it was built. It was given a makeover in the 1960s. It was kind of a mid-century modern makeover. Not everybody likes it, but it's very much of a time. But suffice to say, there was a bank there. So there was a bank corner. On the other corner, there was, over a period of time, there was a pharmacy, a corner pharmacy. And then on the other corner, which is now the sushi place, Tora Sushi, was also a pharmacy. But they were, you know, back in the day, before the fire and after the fire, you had pivotal uses on those four corners. And so I say, folks, this is the heart of downtown. And of course, the visual marker is the Liberty Theater in the heart of downtown. So,
yeah, this is very fascinating. Now, Eric, can you tell me a little bit about who the intended audience is for the walking tours?
Our target audience, a couple levels here. Initially, there was discussion on the board about where to start it and when. And there was consensus that we wanted to start it on the opening day of Sunday Market. So May 10th is opening Sunday Market. There are going to be, maybe you've heard this, astronomers. Someone told me that on a busy Sunday, people coming in for Sunday Market, there are up to 10,000 people coming into Astoria over that five-hour period from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. So we're thinking, well, how many of those people could dedicate maybe an hour to an hour and a half at the beginning? We want to have the publicity out sufficiently so that people can plan ahead. That's a major part, perhaps, of our target audience. And of course, those are people coming here, I'm going to say regionally. I'm sure there are people in the audience who know exactly how far away people come for Sunday Market. But so it's local people and people who are visitors. It's the visitor community that we're looking at. So they could be coming up from Portland to Pub Crawl and they see online, oh, there's a walking tour at 10 o'clock. So, and I have led walking tours on Sunday Market, and it sounds like, oh my God, how do you get people through the crowds? No problem. The crossing guards are great. It is manageable. So don't be concerned that the tours are simultaneous with Sunday Market, because we can deal with it and actually deal with it quite well. So I guess I would say this is a tour for people also that are interested in history and architecture. Mm-hmm. Now, I would say these are people that want to maybe learn more about the amazing depth and complexity that made Astoria what it is today. Yeah.
No, and when we talk about the actual launch of the tour, it's opening Mother's Day weekend. How do we sign up for the tour?
I just checked with Rachel today. And so the easiest way would be to go to the Lower Columbia Preservation Society website and then follow on down. And there is a little button to register. $10 suggested donation. I mean, you can't get more attractive than that, I don't think. So we're hoping people show up and enjoy the tour because this is part of our mission. Mm-hmm. This is what the Lower Columbia Preservation Society is about. We're about preservation and education, and this is an education outreach.
So go to lcpssociety.org.
Thank you.
There we are.
That's it.
And when we think about the timing of the tours, do you have a set schedule that you're planning on doing these tours? Are they every Sunday? Are they every Sunday at noon? What are your What does the schedule look like for?
They are, in fact, astronomers every Sunday at 10 a.m. So they're congruent with the Sunday market, and I think we're going to test run this and see how it goes. We have six people who are trained, if I can use that word. I mean, one of the fun things about architectural walking tours, well, tours in general, but with our particular group, we're going to tell a similar story in terms of the sites, and the route is going to be similar. But people have their own emphasis and their own stories about what really excites them and what maybe their favorite story of downtown is. So we'll have six guides, so we've got pretty good depth of roster here. And we're going to schedule it out certainly for the first month.
And one thing just to kind of emphasize is with each walking tour, it's going to be different, you know, depending on your tour guide, as well as, you know, who else is in the audience. You know, some people ask really interesting questions and they point out details that sometimes you don't even notice. So that's what makes it a unique experience, is that every walking tour that you'll take, you may take the same tour twice, but the experience will be different twice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well said. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is one word you would use to describe this walking tour?
I came up with the term exceptional. I think Astoria is exceptional and basically has been from the outset. I mean, the audacity of John Jacob Astor, you know, a New York millionaire coming out here and setting up a commercial venture, a trading post. I mean, from the outset, from the earliest days of what we call Astoria, Astoria has been a special place. And from the dreams of the Manhattan of the West Coast in the late 19th, early 20th century, when Astoria was the second largest city in Oregon, you can fact check me on that. That was 1880, I believe, 1880 census. So exceptional in surviving and thriving after the Great Fire in 1922, and coming through what people who have lived here for quite a while through the 60s, 70s, and 80s said was a really downtime for downtown and the area in general. And then coming back through the 1990s and up till today, I mean, and continuing the thriving, amenity-rich downtown, drawing people. I mean, Astoria is well known.
Is there anything else you'd like listeners to know about this project and this walking tour?
Well, I hope you come, longtime folks, friends, acquaintances, and give it a try. And we'd be delighted to have you.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Eric, for joining me and talking about the walking tours.
Thank you, Astronomus. It was my pleasure.
Thank you to my fellow board member at LCPS, Eric Wheeler, for joining me on The Preservationists. Thank you for tuning in to this month's episode. Be sure to tune in again next month. The Preservationists airs every third Tuesday of the month on KMUN at 9:30 a.m. I'd like to give a special thanks to the team here at KMUN, the members, volunteers, and staff of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and a special thanks to Camila Swerdloff for producing the theme song of The Preservationists. The Preservationists is a production of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society for KMUN, written and produced by Astronomus Ray. I'm Astronomus Ray, and remember, when it comes to preservation, anyone can be a preservationist. Thank you for listening.